This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org. 10 Radio.
Hello and welcome to 10 Radio on 105.3 FM and broadcasting on the internet at www.10radio.org. This is the Somerset Is Go programme.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Somerset Is Go!
And Somerset Is Go is 10 Radio's weekly look at what is happening in the local economy and to the social enterprises in the Somerset area as well. And we are pleased to say that we are sponsored by Taunton Deans Recession Relief Fund. Today on Somerset Is Go, we're looking at the Big Society. And no, in case you're wondering, it's not a magazine, and it's not a surveillance camera, and it's not a burger. It is, in fact, a government initiative to get people more involved in their communities, to get them to take responsibility and power for the big decisions and the delivery of services in their local areas. It's been talked about for quite some time under a variety of names, but the new government has very much branded it with this title of the Big Society. But what do people on the streets today make of the Big Society? What do they understand by it, and do they want to get involved in it? Well, we went into the square in Wiveliscombe at lunchtime today and we asked a few people. Last week the government launched its proposals for what they call the Big Society. Are you able to tell me what the Big Society is?
No, I'm very sorry, I actually don't know about that bit.
I didn't hear the report and I haven't the faintest idea.
Do you know what the Big Society is?
I have no idea at all.
Are you aware of it? Do you know what it is?
No, no idea whatsoever.
Any ideas, any guesses what it might mean?
Say the word again.
Big Society.
No.
No. Any guesses what it might mean?
No, no, I'd have to think about that, I'm afraid.
Any guesses what it might mean?
No.
Any guesses what the Big Society
might be? I think it probably means that we all have to pull together and be integrated and try and make our own communities better.
Are you aware of what the Big Society is?
Yes.
Can you tell me?
Well, it's giving more freedom to the people, which we need after this Labour government, and I support it 100%.
Is that something that would appeal to you, that you'd want to get involved in?
Yes, definitely.
How do you think you'd get involved?
Well, making my views known about issues that are relative to the town and the expansion of the town.
So it's something you'd welcome?
Definitely, definitely.
Is that something that would appeal to you?
Yes, I would think so, in a very vague sort of way.
Any idea how you'd get involved?
Not personally, no.
No. Is that something that would appeal to you?
I think we already have that. I don't think the government needs to control anything like that. I don't think it'll work.
It's about about government not having control, but
yes.
Communities having more control.
Well, they are
control.
Controlling it by saying that this is what we're going to do.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think that it's necessary. I don't think it's a good idea, or even a big idea.
How do you think you would get involved in it?
I personally wouldn't get involved in it at all.
So you'd leave it up to other people
Leave it up to the government and then decide on what the government are doing.
Is that something that you would want to get involved in?
My community is already fantastic.
Well, Jenny Dutton there, summing up what a lot of people in Wiveliscombe probably feel about this local community and how it functions. But nevertheless, the Big Society as a concept clearly hasn't reached many people, certainly if our totally unrepresentative sample there is any indication of the country as a whole. It hasn't reached many people, and for some, they don't see the need or they don't even want to get involved. Now, at this point in the programme, to elaborate on what the Big Society is and to answer a few questions about how it might be delivered, we had hoped to have an interview with Nat Way, who is the government's new advisor on the Big Society. Nat recently set up the Big Society Network, and you can find out more about that at thebigsociety.co.uk, and is founder of various social enterprises and socially focused organisations. So last week we rang the Cabinet Office where Nat is based to ask for an interview, and the request was initially granted with enthusiasm by the press officer, who said he'd call us back with the arrangements. By Friday we'd heard nothing, so we called again and were told it was in hand and that they'd ring us back. On Tuesday we had to ring again and were again told that they'd call us back, and even this morning we had to call and were told they'd ring us back in half an hour, but they never did. If we'd been told that Nat was too busy or that small community radio stations were not a media priority, well, we could probably have lived with that. But to tell us one thing and then to do the opposite does rather indicate that, in the Cabinet Office at least, the walk is not yet the same as the talk. And sadly, that seems to reflect the experience of many community and voluntary sector organisations trying to work with governments and councils of all colours over many years. So, in the absence of Mr. Way, we had to go higher. And here is a recording of the Prime Minister launching the Big Society last week.
I've been saying for the last 4.5 years that I want to empower the voluntary sector, social enterprises, social capital, the big society, all the things that can actually help us to build a stronger and bigger society in Britain. And I can't think of a better way of empowering you than actually starting by sitting around a cabinet table in power, effectively. And also, today we are publishing the first part of our coalition agreement, and it's a very comprehensive coalition agreement between the Liberal Democrats and the Conservatives, and I think it's a big signal that the first part that we publish is actually that part about the big society, about decentralising power, about empowering communities, about all the work that you do to help build the big, strong society that we want to see here in the United Kingdom. So I hope this is the start of something very big. Because, frankly, for decades, you've had politicians sitting around this table making decisions, telling us all what to do, issuing orders and instructions and passing laws and regulations. And actually, I profoundly believe that if we want real social change, if we want to solve our deepest social problems, whether it's drug abuse, whether it's problems of poor housing, whether it's problems of deep and entrenched poverty, whether it's the problem of children in care, it's going to be the voluntary sector, social enterprises, no longer to be called the third sector. From now on, that phrase is to be abolished. The office of the voluntary sector and social enterprise sector will still be it will be a bigger part of government than ever. We have to involve your organisations and work with you and through you. And today's agenda, really, for me, is hearing from you what more we can do to help catalyse social action and social enterprise in our country. I'll just set out some of the things that will be in this coalition agreement to be published today. The first element is about giving communities more power. So, for instance, our policy to train more community organisers to help actually create the social action of the future. Also, passing a law to have a community right to buy, so that if communities want to come together to save the last pub, the last post office, to take over that bit of derelict land or derelict buildings, and to enable social action that way. Next, to encourage people to play a more active role in their communities. One of the things I've been pushing for the last 5 years is the idea of National Citizen Service, where we take 16-year-olds and actually have a programme for them which is about understanding the importance of voluntary work and social contribution. And I think that's going to be a very big part of this government. Third, giving more power to local government. It shouldn't stay there. In my view, it should be driven down even further into communities. But step one is transferring power from the centre to the local. One of the other elements we've been able to agree very rapidly in our coalition agreement is support for co-ops, for mutuals, for charities, for social enterprises, making sure the compact that you've got already with government, which we think has been honoured more in the breach than the observance, really means something. And one of the, I think, early bits of work is to refresh and renew that compact. Lastly, is the information agenda. If you want people to play a bigger part in our society, you have to give them, yes, the power, you have to have a government that believes in it, but you also need to give people information. And I think crime maps, the right to data, opening up government data so people can see how a social enterprise or a voluntary body could do it better, what government already does, is part of the agenda. So I hope you see that as a sort of positive programme from a government that really believes in the big society and in what you do. And the big ask, if you like, from us to you is what more can we do to make it possible? What steps do you need us to take? How, you know, I fully recognise in the financial situation we're in, there are going to be difficult decisions for government and for government spending. And I don't have some naive belief that the big society just springs up in its place. It's what can we do to help enable you to do even more of what you do. That, I think, is the agenda for today. It's something, as you know, I care passionately about. It's something I would like to be one of the great legacies of this government, is building the big society. Yes, we have to deal with the deficit. Yes, we have to make sure we secure the future in Afghanistan and bring our troops home. But to me personally, what I would most like to be a legacy is actually helping to build the big society through the work that all of you and many, many thousands, hundreds of thousands like you around our country do.
So that's the view from the top, delivered obviously in a passionate way to a small audience of activists and practitioners last week from the voluntary and community sector. But what really lies behind all of the hyperbole? Is there something of substance there, or is it something just constructed to persuade people that power really is being decentralised while in fact it is more and more centralised? The big society has been highlighted as one of the Conservatives' manifesto's commitments that struggled to make it across the doorstep during the election campaign. But since its formal launch on the 19th of May, there has been a fair amount of debate, albeit in particular niches of society, about what it means and how it's going to be delivered and whether it's privatisation by stealth or whether it's a valid way of reducing the role of government. Now, last March in Taunton, there was a conference that was dedicated to the topic of localism. The conference was held, since the conference was held, we have a new government, and consequently we also have a new language. But the notion of localism, as it was before May, is, in my view at least, exactly the same as the notion of the big society, i.e. it's about giving more power and control to local communities. So it seemed pertinent to play a few snippets from that conference and the comments made in questions to the speakers or the speakers' responses or some of the interviews that were grabbed during the day.
To what extent do we end up, or is there a concern I sort of have, and having been in some meetings there, that we assume by empowering communities that they will make the right decisions? I mean, I've been in things where actually they wanted to get rid of the cycle lanes and put in some more car parking, or, you know, there's lots of things where I think, and how do we sort of measure that bit, that communities, once empowered, may not necessarily do all the things we think they should do in terms of addressing some of the issues around sustainability.
How local do you go? And is there the expertise there to make it work? You know, people take out things that other people have put in. And the other point I wanted to make was, I'm one of the ageing population, unfortunately, for all you people here. You're going to have to keep me going when I get in about another 10 years. But years ago, everything was local. How do you get it back to the local? Again, back to my point about expertise. You've got to have expertise.
I'm all in favour of localism, but I'm just wondering whether I'm the only one to think maybe that another Gorgon are local councillors. The mere thought that the current set of local councillors that we have this location is going to be given increasing responsibility when they are all of them, or almost all of them, against engaging communities locally, quite frightens me, quite honestly.
What we've got here, the relationship between representative democracy, i.e. elected representatives, and participative democracy. And at different scales, we need to get the balance right. And we don't have the balance right. It seems to me that there's nothing remotely wrong with having a participative democratic mode which snugly fits in to elected representative democracy. The problem is they bang up against each other too often. So we need to get better forms of operations between representative and participative democracy. The Conservatives say, let's get rid of all those quangos. Fair enough, that's participative democracy. But there's a room for that form of participative democracy. It's how they relate to the representative democracy of elected councillors and accountability and elected members, which is important.
I think there's a big issue about the scale of localism and what should be done at the right at what scale. And I think we need to be intelligent about that. Not everything should be done at the very local neighbourhood scale. If you are going to build or make a decision about where you're going to build a new airport, that's not going to be decided at the neighbourhood level because everyone will say no. If you are going to decide where to build new social housing, that you've got a balance of issues about housing need and about what's the most appropriate housing for a neighbourhood and what will fit in at local level. So we've got to be intelligent about the way we make these decisions. Localism isn't about doing everything at a local level, but it's finding the most appropriate scale to do stuff at and involving people at a local level to the degree to which they want to be involved. Mm. In other words, it's saying, you know, the presumption should be that you do things at the lowest level possible. And that people at a local level may decide to grant decision making powers at a higher level. But you know, the presumption should be on at doing stuff at the local level.
How serious is this whole idea of localism? It has very high ideals, but is it really just embedded in political rhetoric, or is there something solid that can really, really be delivered?
I think, you know, there's a lot of rhetoric, don't make any mistake about that, but I'm pretty sure that we can deliver something. We've got to, really, I don't think we've got any alternative. We live in such a, as I think it was Neil was saying, we live in such a centralised country, a society in the UK, that we really, in order to get the sort of lifestyle and the places to live that we want, we've got to take ownership ourselves. And I think a lot of that localism is around people being active in their communities and being able to take control of their lives. One thing that does need to happen, though, is government does need to let go. It does need to enable that to happen. And at the minute, where it's rhetoric is when central government is talking about, you know, the quote that Julian put up from Gordon Brown about how he wanted the society to be all motherhood and apple pie. Well, this government hasn't done very well at decentralising and at giving away power. And one of the key things is going to have to be that people, that power also comes with some responsibility and some money, you know, and people aren't asking for, in that case, aren't asking for grants, they're asking to be able to raise money locally, like a local precept, like a town council can, like Leslie here, she's done that. And where the town council has done that, they've built their own community centre with a library and everything, so their own sort of community asset has come out of that. Fantastic example. So I do think there's real potential in it, it's just that we need some changes in government.
I think the concept is really a brilliant one and should be applied. It's just I'm not sure there's enough thought given to the practicalities.
So what sort of thought do you think might be needed?
I think there's an awareness that if you ask the community something, you have to be able to answer and respond and take their views into consideration. But it can't be, we've done this, but it doesn't matter what they say.
So that's something that's very easy to say, that councils have to take those views into consideration, but obviously it's not happening very often. What do you think the barriers are to it happening properly?
I think some of the barriers are that what the community wants is not necessarily what fits with written strategies or policies or even what's right at the time. So that to say we're going to listen, we can't listen to just what we want to hear. We have to find a way. And one of the barriers, of course, is until the whole thing is embedded, a barrier is the perception that if we ask the community and they don't tell us what we want to know, we can't do it and we're going to let them down. And from the community's point, if we're asked and nobody listens, that's no point. And that's where feedback and interaction comes. And sadly, the barrier is the resource, the staff, the time, and the money, because it's not cheap. It will get better, and the whole ethos of listening and reacting rather than doing what we say will make things better in the end, because they'll work.
So what sort of difference has pursuing localism made to you in your work? How have you changed the way you work?
I can't answer that. I've been in communities, I've worked with communities for almost ever. And localism to me is just the whole point of it to me is that it's doing what I've been trying to do. I'm just really aware, I'm really concerned that people who talk about localism don't actually know what it's all about.
So there you hear the experience of many people who have been there and doing it for a very long time. But it obviously is something that is very difficult to achieve and to do well. And as years ago someone said to me, regeneration is like rubber underwear. It's a nice idea, but it's very hard to pull off. So is maybe the same to be applied to localism or to the big society, whatever it is that you want to call it. Either way, it does perhaps seem that either the promoters of the big society think that they've invented the wheel and it is so significant that they really need to tell everyone about it and get everyone to come and use it, rather blind to the fact that the wheel has been around for quite a long time already. Or the people who have been using that wheel for all of that time are fearful that the new government agenda is going to completely ignore what they have been doing. I think maybe that is oversimplifying it somewhat. But there are obvious concerns that the big society agenda is trying to push ahead with something which does rather ignore all of those lessons and experience from the past. We're going to take a short break here, but we will be back with an interview with Matt Day, who is the coordinator of the Somerset Market Towns Forum, and getting his take on what the issues are in Somerset and the experience of market towns in engaging their communities in the past. But for now, here are the Rolling Stones and Happy.
Chance of love. I need a love. This is Ten Radio, community radio for the Ten Parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear it on the web at tenradio.org.
So you are listening to Ten Radio and you're listening to Somerset Is Go, where we are taking a look at the big society and what it means and what it might mean for Somerset. If you have any thoughts as we go through the programme, then do feel free to email them in to studio@tenradio.org. We've had a few in already, so we'll try to cover those towards the end of the programme. And I should just say again that Somerset Is Go is sponsored by Taunton Deane Borough Council's Recession Relief Fund, so many thanks to them. Now, we've been hearing from David Cameron about what the Big Society is. We've been hearing from people on the street who generally don't know what on earth the Big Society is. And we've been hearing from practitioners and activists in the Southwest who have been out there and doing what is now called the Big Society for many, many years. But to find out the perspective at the more local level, earlier on I spoke to Matt Day, who is coordinator of the Somerset Markets Town Forum, and I started by asking him what initiatives there had been in the last 10 years to help communities engage with local decision making.
Over the last 10 years, the Market and Coastal Towns Initiative has been one of the key features, really. 10 towns in Somerset have been through that process. And the Market and Coastal Towns Initiative really was a... it was run by DEFRA initially, the Department for Farming and Rural Affairs, as part of the Market Town Initiative, which was a national one, which started in 2000. They set up the MCTA, which was the association to run this, in 2004, and it closed in 2008. Like I said, 10 towns went through it. I mean, it was a really good idea. It was, you know, giving support to communities to agree what their priorities were, to plan for their future, and then also develop the skills that they needed to deliver the projects to address those priorities. So it was very much a collaborative model. There are other community-led planning initiatives that, happened in Somerset. There were 8 other towns that did community planning, either as a part of a parish plan, which many villages across Somerset did, but also some towns like Castle Cary and Ansford, and Axbridge indeed. And then there were other sort of non-MCTI plans that towns did because they could see other towns doing them and wanted to basically use a similar kind of process, but didn't manage to get the MCTI status because you did have to bid for it.
Yeah. So it's quite widespread, the adoption of approaches whereby communities can get involved in their strategic direction and in the decision-making.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, you know, it's something that was promoted and many towns thought it'd be a good idea to be able to have a community plan that identifies the town's priorities. I mean, when I say town, I'm talking the town and the hinterlands, you know, surrounding parishes as well, you know, that use that town as a service and employment centre. And look to the future and see what the issue that will, you know, see what the issues are now and then see where that town wants to go. And I mean, you know, the benefits of doing this process is that, you know, about 550 volunteers, we reckon, have worked in these groups of partnerships who have developed these in the last 10 years. And we estimate that 29,000 people were directly engaged with community-led planning. You know, that's MCTI, non-MCTI, and the parish planning towns. So that's a good level of engagement, you know, and some of these communities, you know, they go down to 2,500, 3,000 people, with the largest being Froome, which is 27,000, I think.
So overall, how successful would you say those initiatives over the last 10 years have been?
Yeah, well, mixed results, really. A large part of it depends on the actual personnel, you know, the actual people on your partnership. If I just can explain, towns formed groups to deliver these plans. Most of them then formed market town partnerships. Some have called them regeneration groups because they focused in different ways. But there's 19 towns that have plans in Somerset in total, and the legacy is still there, which is of 17 market town partnerships, like Woodland Scheme Area Partnership, other regeneration groups and some other groups as well. And as far as results go, they also depend a lot on the local links, you know, the influencing links that each individual partnership has. And they, you know, for instance, Woodland Scheme has been quite successful in influencing the core strategy of the LDF. I mean, that sounds like a lot of gobbledygook to some of your listeners, but the local development framework is the sort of the overarching spatial plan. That's the old local plan, if you like. It's about, you know, development and where it goes. So they've been able to tap into that and influence that, which is great. And I think Taunton Deane, in some ways, have been quite good on some of that. But in other ways, you know, there's a lot of frustrations with a lot of these plans. You know, I mean, it is very difficult for community organisations like market town partnerships and regeneration groups to deal with complex structures, you know, in local government. You know, in Somerset, we've got district and county councils, so that's at least two lots of people you'd be talking to. District and county level local strategic partnerships, so that's two more. And you get some situations where, you know, you get district and borough councils supporting the development of these plans, and it's normally the kind of area-based officers who support those. But then the other parts of that council don't give it any weight whatsoever. And I'm not just talking planning, you know, if you, you know, and that's because these plans don't have any kind of statutory status. You know, they're purely community aspiration and you know, that's been confirmed by a lot of consultation. Their validity is, you know, being held by all of the people that helped to write it. So, you know, one would hope that the local county councillors, local district councillors are really, you know, using that document to support work and to drive work, you know, that drive some of the issues. But it doesn't always work like that.
Yeah. So you've been talking there mostly about involvement with strategic plans, about communities drawing up their own plans and engaging with district and county plans. What's happened when it's come to the actual implementation of getting things done? How much involvement and how much activity amongst the market towns has there been at that level?
Yeah, there's been some really interesting and very different models. Some towns have just seen the community planning process as a way of producing a plan, and they haven't really gone into the delivery. For instance, Frome, it's a very large town, well, very large town, you know, 27,000 people, and growing, and it already has many, many existing groups who can deliver the projects. So there, the role is probably more coordination and support and encouraging and, like we said, you know, influencing. Whereas in other towns, like Shepton 21, which is the partnership in Shepton Mallet, has been very successful in forming task groups that are focusing on each individual project, and they report back to the partnerships. So one of their projects, for instance, was a town centre shop enhancement scheme that has been quite successful, you know, in the centre there to smarten up the town centre and get some of the old shops that were looking a bit tatty smartened up. You know, it's a little thing, but it can help to you know, improve the local economy. And they've you know, that all of them have found frustrations in various ways. I mean, one another example of a group that put a lot of their eggs in one basket, so to say, would be Burnham and Highbridge Regeneration Partnership, who have been working away with SWERDA, the Regional Development Agency, who may or may not be around for much longer. Working with them for 6 years on a project called Civic Pride, and then last year the government raided the old government rather, raided the RDA's budget to pay for a housing scheme, I believe, and SWERDA cut a lot of its projects. Well, you know, that just destroyed that group, because they've been working for 6 years, really, you know, it's a big project Civic Pride was. I think it was about £2 million project to improve the centre of Burnham and along the front onto the Severn Estuary. So, you know, it really blew them apart, and they've basically had to disband now because of they're just so you know, exhausted and worn out with it all. Yeah. So I think some of the problems with you know, community-led planning in towns is that the kind of aspirations that came through from the MCTI were perhaps too high for towns to actually reach, and that, you know, I think if we're going to do it better in the future, we should be, yes, being more realistic. There is going to be less money around, but also perhaps focusing on the things that we can do locally and trying to get them achieved, and perhaps just thinking 5 years ahead. Not thinking any further than that, because, you know, if you look 5 years ago, the world was a quite different place regarding funding.
That will obviously change the approach which had developed in recent years, wouldn't it, of taking a longer term view. That would really be pulling it back, and if you're just planning for the short term, then the change that you can deliver is much reduced.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's difficult. I'd love to be able to say, yes, you know, set your strategic goals and, you know, drive towards them and try and influence local authorities to take that on board. You know, some of that has worked. You know, I can't give you an example off the top of my head, but some of that has made a difference to, like I said, you know, planning documents. But I think, you know, we have to show that we are relevant and delivering on the ground. And certainly, when one looks at the big society and the ideas in there, you know, a lot of it is focused on the neighbourhood level. Now, you know, okay, perhaps it's slightly urban speak, but the way I read it is that, and the proviso here is that, you know, we're basing this on manifestos and the couple of different agreement versions that have come out so far. But it does seem to be about kind of very local intervention, like, you know, sorting out your local school if it's failing, for instance, or, you know, sorting out antisocial behaviour in your area, you know, quite small area. So, you know, market town partnerships, there may or may not be additional funding around in future for big strategic visions, but I think there certainly would be opportunities if market town partnerships see some of the projects in their plans as ticking some of the boxes for this kind of collaborative democracy that certainly the Conservative manifesto was talking about.
As you say, a lot of the idea of the big society is based at that neighbourhood level, and it's about getting people out and getting people engaged. How much hunger or how much capacity do you think exists in Somerset for getting involved in more things based on the experience of the market towns? Because I presume that quite often it was a relatively small number of people who drove forward the idea of market town strategies and got involved in them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is a small number of people who want to get involved in sort of committee work that's about strategic thinking. You know, yes, when you're doing a plan and you're going through the consultation processes, you know, if you make that appealing to people to get them along, then you can get a lot of people out, you know, to give their view on what how things should improve locally. But you're right, it appeals to a small number of people to actually take part in the kind of strategic thinking side of it. I think, you know, like anything, if there is a perceived threat, or, you know, say if a town is either, you know, there's talk about a development, you know, it's particularly large, say, on the edge of a town, that motivates people to get out and do something about it. And I think, you know, the same can be said for community planning. You know, I think, you know, if you can, you know, point out that, you know, a town is as people probably suspect, is, you know, losing its industry, or, you know, suffering from, you know, service withdrawals, then, and if you flag that up in certain ways to get people interested and excited, then you can still get people out. I think it's always easier to get people out on single issue things, you know, like digging up your playing field, or you know, building a load of houses where some people don't think they should go. I mean, you know, you're always going to get that, and yeah. I think we have to be clever about, you know, making the most of that.
What opportunities do you think that the big society offers to market towns and villages in Somerset?
Well, generally, in the Big Society programme, it mentions we want every adult in the country to be an active member of an active neighbourhood group. And market town partnerships are very much that, and we want to see them supported and promoted as that sort of channel. But specifically, the new community housing trusts may be really good. You know, this is local people developing the kinds of housing the community wants. I know that is a problem for some planners, but I think it's going to require a step change in the way planners work. The other thing that's quite useful is that this new classification to protect valued green spaces. In many of our towns, there are issues where development is encroaching on green spaces, and that will be quite useful. The right for communities to save facilities and services when they're threatened, again, you know, very interesting. Number of our towns have projects where they are looking to put together, looking to reuse old buildings that have, you know, that have not got a use now, but are, you know, important local civic buildings. Like the Minehead Old Hospital, and the Wibbliskin Town Hall, you know, above the co-op there. So, and then running state services as well, you know, the opportunities. Although the previous government was talking about commissioning an awful lot, but when it actually panned out, it was really just for larger organisations such as charities that could cope with the tendering process for that.
Mm.
And then finally, I think the other opportunity is the kind of revised planning system that they're talking about, this open source planning. They're talking about we will make a truly local plan built out of a process of collaborative democracy, the centrepiece of the local planning system. I mean, you know, you can really see the value of community plans there. You know, these town plans that we have, you know, we should be using the people who helped write them, you know, and, you know, the content in them as really the starting point for that. There's a lot of experience already out there, you know, so we can help in the towns to create that.
I think there is a cynicism, though, isn't there, that from the left especially, that this is a bit of a stalking horse for privatisation. And Toby Young was on Newsnight recently talking about the free schools movement, which he's been very involved in, and that's all part of Big Society, about parents taking control, being able to set up new schools. And then suddenly he announced that actually they didn't want to run it themselves, and that they would look to get private sector or a big charity in to do it for them. And I guess there is that sneaking suspicion.
There is that sneaking suspicion, and also the fact that, you know, the emphasis on volunteer action is also very cheap, isn't it? You know, I mean, it's, you know, one could cut lots of very good officers, you know, community development officers' posts, But what's going to happen? You know, those officers support a lot of community groups across the county. Yes, there's going to be less money around in the future, but you know, just to kind of get rid of a lot of this support system for groups will have a major effect. And you can't do it all by setting up a website with some fact sheets of, you know, here's how you do this or that. You need actual people to help people through it on the ground. I do wonder, you know, how privatised this is going to get. And, you know, although not in any way political, you know, we've seen certain privatisations in this country not actually result in a better service, and I think our communities desperately want better services and more efficient services. Do they really, you know, whether a revolution in how they're delivered is required is another thing, but you know, let's try and make things work better locally, and if the community can be involved in that. I mean, not every community is going to want to run currently state-run services. You know, if the local authority can clean the streets more efficiently, then, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
we'll have to see how it pans out, because I think there's a lot of that, you know, there's a lot that we don't know, and you can go off to other countries and have a look at how things work, but, you know, how things pan out down here, you know, on our patch, will be of interest to us. And what I was discussing with my steering group when we met this morning was that we'll be looking to organise something later in the year where we invite hopefully some reasonably senior members of the government to come along and talk about this localism agenda and how it will actually relate to us on the ground. Because it is still fairly unclear.
We weren't lucky enough to get Nat Way from the Cabinet Office on the programme, but if you were talking to him and he was looking for some hints and tips from you on how to make the Big Society a success, what would you say to him?
I would say, you know, there are a whole host of people out there who have been trying to improve their local communities for a number of years, you know, whether that's through MCTI parish planning or non-MCTI plans, and you know, use that knowledge. You know, don't discard that knowledge that's been built up. There is a lot of local knowledge around consultation and being an advocate for groups of people. Yes, they may not necessarily be supporting community-led planning directly, although they do refer to village plans in one of the documents, the latest agreement. And you know, if support the existing people out there. They're all volunteers, but they do need support at times. You know, with training. With knowing, you know, good practice that's going on, and some of that work, you know, we deliver in the Market Town forums. There are fora in each of the counties across the southwest, and you know, it's not just that the Market Town partnerships are looking for project funding, but you know, we are running fairly lean and mean county forums, and we also need some funding, because all our funding is, well, most of our funding is due to run out in March 11. So, I mean, you know, we've got a network here that could be very useful to you know, rolling out the Big Society in the southwest, and it would be great if government could see that and support it rather than you know, bypassing us.
So that was Matt Day from the Somerset Market Town Forum speaking about the experience of community involvement in market town regeneration over the last 10 years or so. We're going to take a little break again now, but we will be back very soon and just having some concluding remarks, a wrap up on it, and your emails as well, so stay tuned.
This is 10 Radio, community radio for the 10 parishes on 105.3 FM. Or you can hear us on the web at 10radio.org. 10 Radio.
So this is 10 Radio and this is Somerset Is Go, and we've been looking at the big society and what people think of it locally, which is not a lot because not many people have actually heard of it, although the principles they do quite like. We've heard from David Cameron on what his take on it is and how he launched it. We have heard from the experience of a number of people who have been involved for many, many years in the fields of community development and encouraging communities to participate in decision making. And most recently we heard from Matt Day, who is coordinator of the Somerset Market Towns Forum, about the experience of community engagement in the future of towns in Somerset as part of the government's Market Town Initiative, which followed the foot and mouth outbreak in the early noughties. Obviously, the big society is an emerging concept in many ways, at least as defined by the government. It's an emerging concept and it's early days, so it obviously needs to be given a bit of time at least to develop its thoughts and its principles and work out what it's going to be able to do. But there are obviously concerns about it. There are concerns from people who have been involved and who feel that maybe the lessons of the past are being forgotten or ignored. There are concerns about the complexities of delivering real engagement. There are concerns about whether the councils will really be willing to give up power and whether local politicians will be willing to give up power to their local communities. There are concerns about whether there is really any money to back up all of this. But the people around, you know, in Somerset and certainly here in Wiverliscombe already have a huge amount of engagement and participation in local society and in local decision making. And although I have always really hated this this construct of a rural-urban split, which I don't believe really exists, I do rather wonder if the idea of the big society is born of a very metropolitan elite who have done a few things and have made a big difference in the way that they've approached things, but think that they are the first ones there. They are looking at very particular examples, such as the Big Lunch, the initiative launched last year by one of NatWay's colleagues, who encourage communities to set up a lunch picnic for their street or whatever one day last year, and that was in itself a huge success. But I think maybe that works in that typical suburban setting where many people don't even know their neighbour. In somewhere like Wiverliscombe or in small towns throughout the country, that is a scenario that just doesn't really exist. People do know who their neighbours are and they are engaged. Wiverliscombe, for example, has a very high level of volunteering. We have many social enterprises, not least the swimming pool, which provides a unique and very valuable service to the community. But you have to ask, given that, is there really appetite for more? Do people really want to get involved in more decision making and have to go to endless meetings with councils about the decisions that will be made? Often it does seem that it's the same people that do much of the work behind the scenes to make things happen, although many others do participate at the end of the day. But will this just be more work falling on the same few shoulders? The big society concept is something which is still emerging. You can contribute to the ideas at bigsociety.co.uk, where they have a very ambitious target of getting 15 million people involved in the Big Society network by 2020. And there is also a very good report written by Channon and Miller, which you can find at pacesempowerment.co.uk, which highlights how the Big Society could potentially work, and flags up some of the dangers, some of the misunderstandings, but really talks about the fact that communities cannot take over public services, but communities can contribute to local authorities running of public services in a much more effective way. And it highlights the role of community organisers, pointing out that many of these are already there. They're called community development workers, but really for them to be able to have a fulfilled role within the big society, they need to be given the proper funding for their jobs to continue, and they also need to be given the power to really influence decision making by other departments, by other local authority bodies. Just a very quick look at some of those emails that have been coming in. We have had one which asks if the Big Society is a scaled down or a runaway version of the Great Society, which was Lyndon B. Johnson's agenda in the 1960s in the USA, which had two main goals of social reforms, two social reform goals of the elimination of poverty and racial injustice. So maybe it takes something from that, but is a much tamer version of it. And another message which wonders about how much small local social enterprises are going to be able to engage when it does seem that government spending, government contracts, government support is really only aimed at larger social enterprises and voluntary organisations. There's one particular example here that funding support is only available to, or training support is only available to, organisations with five or more staff. So certainly in many communities, the small ones are going to be missed out once again. We've overrun slightly, but thank you very much for listening to Somerset Is Go programme. If you want to find out more about local politics, you can tune in to community show, 9 o'clock on Friday, when we have the Foreign Office Minister, Jeremy Brown, MP, in the studio, who will be answering your questions. So do tune in then. But for the moment, this is Somerset's Go. Thank you for listening.